In this episode, updates to the SpaceX Starship, Tesla reveals their Q4 results, and we've visited the furthest object in the solar system so far. Let's get ludicrous. Welcome to the Our Ludicrous Future podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future tech stuff that's happening right now that's going to change the way we live in the future. I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from the Everyday Astronaut Things with the Internet. And with us, as always, is Ben.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics. Just had to throw that extra one in there for 2019. I know you guys missed me from last week, so get all your zizzing in.
Ben's New Year's resolution was to get everybody saying Tesla instead of Tesla.
Well, hold on, Ben.
So I've got Elon and Franz already, so we're starting at the top.
Oh, you got him doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, either way, they do it. Who knows?
I like how you said you missed me last week. But not, we were all gone, Ben. It wasn't just
Right, but you guys have been publishing videos. I haven't published a video in like forever now. So that's what I meant. I didn't mean here, obviously. Sure. Obviously, they all miss us all here because of stuff and reasons.
Speaking of publishing videos, if you are on YouTube and you're seeing a galaxy behind me, no, I'm not in space yet. This is still up from, I did the Astro Awards for New Year's, kind of like reflecting back on the best space flight events of space events, not just space flight, space events of 2018. Got it out right before midnight my time, December 31st. So yeah.
Yeah. Go space.
Go space.
I thought you brought up your portrait business again, and this was like a background for like family portraits or something, you know, like at the mall.
What's that thing in Napoleon Dynamite where she has that, like, it's like the headshots?
Glamour shots?
Glamour shots. Yeah. This is my new glamour shot studio.
that's what I was thinking. Like, that's your new, like, icon. Like.
And see, look, I just Google for mall shots, space background, and all I get are shootings that happen at malls. This is the world we live in. Great.
There
goes the whole joke about the mall glamour shots.
Yeah.
Oh, shots.
Sad. This ain't
me, baby. I got a legit operation here, folks.
Well, so you were traveling recently, right? Did we all go somewhere over the holidays? What were you guys up to?
Yeah, I traveled.
Yeah, to space or closer?
Not yet. Sore subject. No, I went down to Wichita, which I think is the same thing as space, right? Most people call it, you know, Wichita/space, same thing.
Right.
No, I've got a really good group of friends of mine live down there. It was a band that I toured with for years. They're called Abandon Kansas. They played one last kind of show. They hadn't played forever. This was kind of like their, like, send-off almost to themselves. It was like they kind of, like, had one of those, like, ramps. Like, for instance, the drummer, his dad died suddenly in a motorcycle accident, like, 5 years ago. And he had to just stop playing, like, instantly. Like, the day he died, he never played drums again. Because he just had to take over his dad's, like, the pool store and all these things that, like, he was doing. So he, like, never got, like, any closure in music and stuff. And so it was kind of, like, a big deal. It was a really cool thing. So I had to, like, Audrey and I drove down to Wichita, even though we were both, like, had been sick all week and we were, like, tired from all the holiday stuff. We're like, we're doing it. We drove 10 hours down on Friday, came back 10 hours on Saturday. It was quite the road trip, but it was worth it.
And it was cold, I bet, right?
Very cold, like 25. So our range was greatly affected.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask about that. Like, first of all, just the long drive in a Tesla and the recharging and everything, but also in that kind of cold. I mean, were there challenges involved with that?
So this, remember, I went to St. Louis around Thanksgiving, and this is a way easier trip than St. Louis as far as the supercharging route goes, because we had a supercharger option every, you know, 100 miles pretty easily, or sorry, 160 kilometers quite easily.
and it's miles here. Just come on.
So it was a lot easier. We didn't, like, worry about going slow and stuff like that. We could easily pull up. You know, we kind of paid attention a little bit more than still a normal car. And it is obviously less convenient. That's supposed to be about a 7.5-8 hour drive. So it added a good amount of time. But I think if this was summer, I don't think it would have hardly added more than about a half hour total, honestly. It's just that we were stopping at like every supercharger. And some of them were way out of the way too. Like in Kansas City, you had to go down this like 4-lane road with like stop sign or stoplights every quarter mile for like 5 miles. I'm like, this is not convenient at all. And then it was one of those slow urban chargers that was only like 68 kilowatt hours or kilovolts or whatever it is. Kilowatts.
Yeah. It doesn't last forever though, right? Did you notice the charge rate drop kind of dramatically as it fills up?
On the normal ones, yeah.
Yeah, like mine, we just got back from Arizona, and we would start out with, at a regular supercharger, 115 kilowatts. So the thing, in terms of miles of range you'd get per hour is like 450 or some crazy amount. But then literally within 10 minutes, it dropped to 90, and then it dropped to 70. You know, it just as it fills up, it drops kind of dramatically. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, it's like 60 is actually good if you can maintain that for a while, you know. But it's just, it drops so quickly.
And Joe, you road trip too, didn't you?
Yeah, so this was the first trip. I mean, I've used a supercharger before, but this was the first trip that like I really relied on it to get where I was going and everything. And so I went to my dad's place and I just charged up in his garage while I was there. I was there for a couple of days, so when I wasn't driving, I just plugged into his 110, you know, and that got me enough to get back. And then we went to my my in-laws down near Austin. And I charged up there too, but hit the superchargers in Fort Worth and Waco. And so this was the first time that I was putting to the test this whole theory that like it doesn't really take that much more time out of your drive, and it's not really that inconvenient. Like I've heard people say that, but I've never really had to experience it before, so I wasn't really sure. And honestly, we would stop, charge up. We would sit in the car. There was a Collins Street Bakery in Waco, which is like this, you know, nice little restaurant kind of thing. And so my wife would go in and get some food or whatever. And we're just sitting there hanging out. And it's like, I think like when you're relaxing, you kind of see that's like, well, I mean, we've got enough to go. But it's like, you almost don't want to go at that point because you're like, I'm just chilling out and I'm relaxing. It's like, do I got to get back on the road?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like you're leaving before you really even want to.
Right.
And maybe when you're filling your tank with gas, when you've got a regular car, it's like, okay, just go, go, go. And you don't have time to sort of chill out and relax. But when you do have that time, it's like, oh, I'm kind of enjoying just sitting here right now and listening to music and, you know, just having a minute. And, so anyway, it didn't feel at all like I was going, oh, come on, move, you know? It was the opposite. I wasn't ready to go yet when it was time to go.
You definitely have a different mindset, I think.
Yeah, it's a different
like
experience.
First off, you leave, you know, you just understand that this will take longer. You know, we planned it being a much longer drive, but you're also just in this mode of like, we're going to get there when, you know, you have to just manage time a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, definitely less convenient time-wise. But if you're in the right mindset, it's still a very enjoyable thing, you know.
Now, how many times did you guys have to stop? So, Tim, you had to stop a lot, you said.
1, 2, 3, 4 times on the way down, and then on
each
the way,
way
back up, we skipped one of the Kansas City ones since it was so out of the way.
Yeah.
And that ended up being beneficial. We actually cut off a half. We did it up in 9.5, down in 10. So we cut off a lot of time by skipping that supercharger.
And what about you, Joe?
3 times.
3 times you had to stop each way, or
I actually stopped twice. Okay, so I drove out to sort of west of here to visit my dad, and then I drove. Come on, and then I drove back through Fort Worth to visit my in-laws, and then back from the in-laws to Dallas. So,
and did you stop at the Silos? Do they have a supercharger?
They don't at the Silos.
That would be the ultimate.
I guess so.
What's the Silos? Is that that?
See, Tim, we'll get you there, buddy.
Is that like
that? No, is the HGTV?
Chip and Joanna. Chip and Joanna.
Yeah, Chip and Joanna. I was thinking that. I couldn't think of their names. I was going to say like John and Marla or something.
Oh,
they
no.
basically own Waco at this point.
Yeah, like Waco's entire real estate market is booming because of them. Everybody wants to come there and get a house. But now they're done with the show. Anyways.
Fix it up.
Yeah,
now they're just selling all their stuff in Target and whatnot.
So I went to Phoenix from San Diego, and previously when I would do this with my Model S, which had a 200-mile range, I would have to stop three times and then a fourth time because there were no chargers, no real superchargers in Phoenix. And Phoenix is a giant place, so getting – like I went to my grandma's house. From where we were staying is about a 45-minute drive without traffic, just on the freeway the whole way. So and you're still in Phoenix, so it's really big. So you need a lot of charge when you're there. This time we took our Model 3. We had to stop once on the way there. And kind of like what you were saying, Joe, it's really nice. The stop is in Yuma, and it's at the last point of the Southern Pacific Railway.
You've talked about this before.
Yeah, so like we're playing on the banks of the Colorado River. There's a park there. We got some Mexican food. We're hanging out eating. Our son is playing. It's like we don't want to leave, right? It's fine. I mean, it's fine, you know. If he's happy, that's all that matters. So we actually ended up staying a little bit longer. But that was really, really nice just having to stop once. Like we went from our house to there and from there to our hotel. No problem at all. Our hotel had a charger. It was great. There's now like four or five superchargers in the Phoenix area. Also was great. We went up to Sedona area to see my dad. And then we came back last night. And last night we had to stop a couple times because we were coming from an extra 2 hours north. I did have some close calls on autopilot, which I did not enjoy at all. The roads just it loses the lines on some of the bridges, and it does this kind of thing, going 70 miles an hour on a mountain road with other people next to you. Not exactly the greatest thing. So, but in terms of charging and all that, I felt like it wasn't bad at all. I mean, with a toddler, you're going to stop and let them, you know, run around a little bit as much as you can. So, yeah, I think we're getting closer. Although I do have a video coming out, foreshadowing to the on what it would take to actually have the same level of convenience with a gas car compared to an electric car. So, yeah, stay tuned for that because it's actually surprising like how much further we have to go in this space before it really is like on you know kind of parity. But like you said, you know, a lot of these times it's actually not a big deal as long as you have the right mindset going into it.
I definitely am ready for there to be more superchargers in general. Like we don't need more stalls. I know that there's obviously like it's easy for them once they put, you know, some of these road trips for now, I guess, like they were almost always empty. Maybe like one other car out of like six or eight stalls. So, but I know like once you might as well do eight, you know, like why would you do like two stalls? But I would definitely prefer more options myself.
Yeah, more locations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually expecting it to be worse over Christmas. Like I was a little concerned about that, but I never had to wait for one or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Yuma where we were at, there was a wait when we were leaving. There was backed up and people were waiting, and some of them had a baby, and I felt bad. Like, man, you guys, like this will be rough. And I think it's just because in between Phoenix and San Diego, there are a fair number of them now, but I mean, they're all like 200 miles apart or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to stop at almost all of them, or, you know, somebody will be stopped at each one. So, but yeah, it was good. Definitely more, I'm noticing a lot more, superchargers in this kind of Southwest region right now.
Yeah. For now, it is definitely less convenient than a gasoline car.
Like 100%. That's just
undeniable. But it's exciting, and you can kind of see where it's going, and you get a good sense that, like, with autopilot and stuff, it's pretty – road tripping is great. We did have a thing, though. Yeah, our autopilot did a couple kind of weird things. And then for, like, half of the trip, like, the last, like, 2 hours on the way down and, like, the last – and, like, the first 8 hours on the way home – it would not merge back into the right lane. Like, you know, you turn on the turn signal and it would just sit there blinking and just stay in the lane.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the lane change, really. I've had a lot of issues with that. It's like it starts to go over and then swerves back into the lane for no reason at all. I mean, I'm not like if you're just staying in the lane and, you know, going speeding up and slowing down, I've had great luck with that. Navigate on autopilot seems to be when it gets real sketchy if I do the navigate on autopilot thing. So I don't really do that much anymore. Like it's, it's beta, you know.
Well, I tried that for the first time and was amazed when it took the exit and like turned on the blinker and everything.
Yeah.
Like the blinker went off. I was like, whoa, that just, it was like a magic trick or something.
That's pretty incredible, right?
Like, that's one of those things. I think we're going to see massive, massive changes in in the autopilot stuff this year. Like, I think about how much data they're getting right now. I mean, they just have to be like sitting there going, you know.
Now it's, that they have cool. a lot of cars on the road.
Yeah. A ton of cars covering a ton of miles. Like, it's cool. It's
so,
cool. And
so, Ben, how many cars did they sell this year?
Well, thanks for asking, Joe.
Yeah, I want to see those numbers.
Yeah, so we just got – what's the best way to show this? There's a Wikipedia page here, and it has a chart that I'm not in love with, but it does illustrate the point fairly well. So let me share that if you guys are watching on YouTube, and I'll try to narrate as best I can here on the podcast. So you can see that – well, the production and sales numbers for Tesla just came out. This was an 8K filing with the SEC. And if you're watching on YouTube, seeing this chart, which is a stacked bar chart. Again, forgive me for that, all you data viz wonks out there. but yeah, but in Q4, they had record deliveries. It was over 90,000. This chart here on, oh, there you go, 90,700. Is what Wikipedia is reporting. I believe that's what the SEC statement says as well. A huge number of those were Model 3, obviously. I mean, the growth of the Model 3 numbers is just insane. So according to this, they had 63,000 Model 3 sales in Q4 alone. That's up from 56,000. So it was an improvement. It wasn't a dramatic improvement, but it's going. And according to their statement, they're now on sort of a run rate for 350,000 cars per year with their current Gigafactory 1 and Fremont factory. So in 2019, I would expect them to have, yeah, right around there, 350 maybe, 350,000 sales or deliveries. Now, a big reason why that's going to continue to grow or kind of hit that point and maintain it is they're now going to be delivering in Europe. All the left-hand drive areas, not the right-hand drive yet. That's coming later in the year, they said. And now that the federal tax credit is dropped in half in the U.S., which wiped out $3,750 from it, Tesla actually dropped the price on all of their models by $2,000. Mm-hmm. So they made up, you know, more than half of that difference there. Mm-hmm. So obviously, with a more expensive product, there's going to be less people that can afford it. And, you know, even if demand is there, they just physically won't be able to buy it. So, you know, them kind of meeting it or you know, trying to compensate for a lot of that, I think will keep the demand and everything in the U.S. sustained. And then with deliveries happening kind of in large scale in Europe now, and then, you know, probably in Asia later in the year, or all the left-hand drive markets coming on. You know, 2019 is shaping up to be a fairly good year. Of course, Wall Street is Wall Street, and they missed the Wall Street analyst estimate by like a fraction, very small fraction. And so it sent their stock tumbling by like 10% or something because it's Wall Street. But, you know, honestly, who cares? I think if people are looking at Tesla as a blue chip stock, they're looking in the wrong place. It's going to be volatile as obviously with the Model Y unveiling happens sometime in Q1, hopefully. Probably getting new plans about upgrades to the Model S and X, as well as possibly a new location. Or we already talked about it, but if the Gigafactory 1 starts to make the Model Y, or if that's the plan, lots of more investment in that stuff. But, you know, all of it's going to lead to just another monster year. Easily, 2019 is going to be the biggest sales and production year for Tesla in its history, as was 2018. And then 2020, the China factory will come online. It'll probably, you know, up it up to 500,000 cars or more in that time. So big stuff.
I have a question, though. I'm confused because it looked like they ended up having like inventory on Model 3 for the first time by the end of the year. But I thought they had like 400,000 pre-orders.
Yeah. And so one of the things that was interesting that they said was that a big percentage of the new Model 3 deliveries were people that had never had a reservation. So there's still a lot of people with a lot of reservations out there. The assumption, I don't think we have any official word on this, or I haven't, you know, found it in the SEC document, is that people are waiting on the standard one, as well as there's a lot of people overseas. So that's kind of where the reservation holders kind of are living. But
I also wonder how many of them ended up just buying an S or an X. before the 3 came out in 2018, you know, out of impatience.
Yep. Yep. That's totally right. I know many people that ask me a lot of questions on my channel, and that's what I recommended. I'm like, look, you know, it depends on your situation, but I still think, I mean, the S is the way I describe it is it's a far more functional vehicle. It has much more space, the hatchback, all these other things. But the 3 is a more fun vehicle. It's way more fun to drive. It's smaller. It fits in tighter spaces, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the fact that you can get a used Model S for like $35,000, $40,000 in the U.S., I mean, you don't even need a tax break at that point. I mean, this thing, and, you know, if you've never driven one, it's like far and away like the most amazing thing you'll ever drive. So, you know, so I think like, there's probably a lot of people doing that. Now there's going to be a huge amount of used S and X coming on the market. So I think, you know, they're going to be kind of ubiquitous in a lot of the more densely populated areas in the U.S. where it's easy. You know, because mm-hmm. you don't need 500 miles if you're not really taking it on long road trips. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we all did.
We all just did. Yeah. So just to clarify. So I was looking at Wikipedia. It looks like it had some of those numbers a little bit wrong. Q4 deliveries grew to 90,700 vehicles, which was 8% more than their prior all-time high in Q3. So 8% growth. I think Wall Street was expecting like 9% or 10% or something like that. This included 63,150 Model 3s, which is a 13% growth. So Model 3 deliveries grew by 13%. 13,500 Model S and 14,050 Model X vehicles, which that is kind of surprising to me that more Model X's were delivered than Model S, because maybe everyone's just expecting an upgrade to the S, but I mean the X like is more expensive and is definitely not as popular as the S because the S is their kind of flagship vehicle. So yeah, so I guess
right now if you want a car there's two options, but if you want an SUV there's only one option.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just traditionally the X has totally lagged in demand and everything. Yeah. So it's surprising to see that, I guess. So that gives them a total of 245,000 vehicles delivered in 2018, 145,846 Model 3. Oh, this was the thing. 99,394 Model S and X. Wall Street expected 100,000. You're like 606 wow. off. And
they're clearly going bankrupt. Less.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
Than a percent.
Yeah, so to put reading from their statement here, to put that into perspective, they delivered almost as many vehicles in 2018 as they did in all prior years combined.
No, I was just thinking about they hit the 200,000 mark in July, and then in Q4 they sold 93,000. That's almost half. And how long did it take them to get to 200,000? They started in, 2012?
Yeah, 2012 was when the S started being delivered.
So it took them 6 years, 6.5 years or whatever, to get to 200,000. Yeah. And then in Q4, they sold 93,000.
Yeah, let me show you this chart real quick, too. Let me show you this chart that I made. Is this the right one?
I like Ben's charts.
Yay. Let me just see if I can actually pull it up appropriately. So I haven't updated this yet. So apologies on... Yeah, it looks... There you go. Which one is it? Right here. So you guys can kind of see that. If you guys look at, so I'm going to update this. This is the monthly sales. So the monthly ones are gathered by looking at the registrations, the VIN registrations with the NHTSA or somebody like that. But you can see, so the way, a real good way to look at comparisons between something like how well the 3 is doing compared to the S or X is you have to baseline them all. So you baseline them not on actual dates, but on the months since they started. Mm. And so that's what this chart is showing you here. It's showing you essentially that from the months since the launch, the Model 3 achieved almost 80,000 deliveries in 14 months, so just over a year. So I haven't updated this since we got these new numbers, but you can just see the Model 3 is just skyrocketing, whereas the Model S and the Model X, you know, kind of have a very similar trajectory. So again, it's like one of those things when you look at it, I mean, just everything is up and to the right. All the graphs you put Tesla are up and to the right. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's going to be a good few years, I think, as long as they don't, you know, shoot themselves in the foot again or anything like that.
Well, I'm surprised there in that chart, it shows that the Model X is actually kind of being, you know, delivered more compared to the Model X compared to the Model S actually is Higher. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, it originally wasn't, right? It took over about what month is this here? 15 months. And then since month 15, it looks like they've been delivering more X than S.
Historically, so, compared to the S, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Based on the months, so that's not in real time. That's not like in actual days. That's like months since they started delivering them, right?
And these are also, it's cumulative or whatever.
Cumulative.
Cumulative,
yeah.
There we go.
Yep. Or additive, as we may say. So okay. on the left, you can see the axis here is a running sum of sales.
Okay.
Cool. And sales in this context means delivered, so.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, if you're listening to this, basically the Tesla Model 3 is a near vertical, like if you were skiing or snowboarding, this would be like a triple black diamond. This would be like you need a parachute to go down, yeah, you know, safely. And then the S and the X are like a blue diamond, maybe, or a blue square, circle. I haven't been there in a while, whatever.
just for some relative, and so again, I need to update this with the latest data, but in 14 months, Tesla was able to deliver just about 80,000 Model 3s in 14 months. For the Model S, that took about 50 months. So that's just kind of in a, you know, timeline comparison. And the Model X, unless, you know, I have to update it, but they may not have even ever delivered that many. And basically, the Model X will probably never catch up to the Model 3, right?
Yeah.
So the Model 3, I think from here on out, is going to be easily the lion's share of their revenues and everything else. With the price drop, it is interesting to see what's going to happen to profits, though. So that's going to be a real interesting thing because they had like a 20% margin or so, which is incredible on it. But now with the standard range, whenever they start to release that, like there's going to be, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows from here on out. In general terms, things are all looking really, really solid for him now. So that's great.
I think we're going to see that thing that we talked about where I'll bet a good number of increases in sales now will just be people experiencing a Tesla for the first time now.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many people. I mean, I have friends that live, like I have a friend that came back from California and he's lived there for 3 years. And he's like, I've never been in a Tesla. I'm like, how? They're like the most common car out there, you know, but he just hasn't really been in one. But it's just funny to see how many people, it's their first time being in one. Not the Model 3 is out. Like it's yeah, definitely. And a lot of people are like, I really, really want one of these.
I was going to ask if, you know, visiting people over Christmas, you had that situation with your car. Like, 'cause I did.
I probably gave 15, 20 people a ride over the past like 2 weeks, you know, and none of them had really been in a Tesla before. So.
Yeah, there, cool. there's a so I went back to my hometown, which is a really small Texas town, and apparently nobody's ever seen a Tesla before in that town. And so I was like this little weird little celebrity kind of thing. But but no, there was like some kid that my aunt used to keep back in the day who babysat.
You kept him?
He would keep him?
She hoards kids.
She collects children.
Yeah.
She's got this a must be a Texas thing. Around.
Yeah. But anyway, no, so there's this kid who's like apparently obsessed with Teslas, but he's never actually seen one. And they were like, can he come over and get a ride? And I'm like, okay, you know. And so this kid came over. He's like 11 years old. And I drove him around town and he was like, this is the best day ever. And he's freaking out. And it's like,
isn't that great?
And even just with a family that didn't get a ride in it, they just kind of like came out to the car while it was, you know, out in the driveway or something. They were just like, this is so cool, and they just couldn't get over it.
Yeah,
it was a good period for the reactions that I got from people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a lot of that as well. So my favorite trick is I have people sit in the front seat and I go in the back seat and we do romance mode, so they're laughing and they're uh-huh. joking, you know. So you turn on romance mode and then you touch it and the music starts playing, and then I do summon from inside the car in the back seat, and they're like, what's going on? Oh my God, it's driving. Oh my God. They're That's just totally one. Freaking out. And that usually puts people just over the top there with
I
like,
think someone does put people over the top because the car is like doing its own thing and there's nobody in it. And it's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I definitely got people like crying, laughing with fart mode.
Yeah. I played with fart mode a bit.
It was great. Oh my gosh. Like I had one friend that was just literally in tears, and like he couldn't even get the like what is this and why, out because he's just like just crying laughing. It was so good.
Now one of my nephews, they were playing some games and he lost, so of course, you know, he's a little kid and he's like, Christmas is ruined now, you know. So he was like on the verge of crying and I was like, hey, come here, let me go show you something. And so I took him out in the car and I started showing him Fart Mode and that cheered him up.
Problem solved. Solving problems with farts.
Hey, I just updated that chart actually.
Oh my word.
Dude.
That's how insane it is. So if you guys are, so that ski slope now is just like almost a straight cliff.
Yeah.
So, and I got this data from Inside EVs. Shout out to them for doing all the hard work collecting it. So according to this, Tesla Model 3 is now at 141,546 cars delivered. And whereas the Model S is at, oh, geez, did it beat the Model S? 141,279. Well, it did. So
there's more Model 3s on the road already than Model S's, period.
Yep. And that will never change.
Yeah.
Unless they stop making the Model 3 or something. I don't know. So there you have it. I mean, it's just when you look at it like this, I really have a hard time. How could anybody objectively look at a chart like this and go, oh, the Model 3 is dead or something?
Yeah. Like, or Tesla's screwed.
Yeah. Like there's just absolutely no way. But. It's like people cherry pick the data, but this is legitimately like a very common way to analyze and compare things. That is like an industry standard. You know, even if you go into YouTube now, I'm sure you guys have seen the new YouTube analytics and stuff. This is how they show you your videos, right? They show you like how this video is doing compared to normal videos.
Yeah.
And the way it does that is baselining. So this isn't like I just made this up to make them look good. Like this is totally normal.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's
a good story.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's actually a big deal that they outsold the Model S already.
Yeah, in what, like a year?
not even a year.
17
really,
months.
I mean, yeah, really only 2018 sales alone probably almost did it because there's few sales in 2017.
Yeah,
I
like
think
a Q4, thousand.
They're only like 200.
Oh, actually, no, that would have flipped it because they're only like 300 off. But
yeah,
fine.
Yep, that
give
flipped it.
Give it a month, you know, and it'll be. Yeah.
Yep. That's crazy. Oh, well, should we move on? Because speaking of
space.
Beginning of 2019, we've already had... I mentioned at the beginning of the show, like, if you're on YouTube, you're seeing my background for my, like, show where I put on the best events of 2018. We had two big things happen right at the beginning of 2019 that I would have loved to have in my 2018 show because they're awesome things. And, Joe, you were... reading up on I haven't really had time to look into Ultima Thule or whatever too much. What exactly is going on here? Why is BB-8 in space?
It does look like BB-8 to me. So we all remember when New Horizons flew by Pluto in 2015 and got those awesome photos that were like groundbreaking. We'd never seen anything like that before. Well, it is still continuing on its way out of the solar system at one of the fastest rates that we've ever created as a species. Not quite as fast as Voyager, but it's going pretty fast. And they set their sights on another Kuiper Belt object that they called Ultima Thule. That wasn't its original name. It was originally like a word salad of numbers and jumbled letters and stuff, but it was discovered in 2014 by Hubble. It's a very dark object. It's about 20 kilometers long. Actually, well, judging by what's on the screen, it's 33 kilometers long, but they originally said 20. So it's about 33 kilometers long. They just got some pictures back from it, literally like within hours of the new year changing. I guess like while the world was going around, it was probably still 2018 and like, I don't know, Los Angeles or whatever. But anyway, it passed by. Now it takes something like 16 hours or something for the signal to even reach us. So the stream is really... it's going to take months for them to get all the data back and get the really high resolution images, but they have already created some low res images of it. And it looks like a little snowman, maybe half
so
a snowman.
Crazy.
It's missing a third segment, but it's two rocks that have basically been kind of smushed together a little bit. The reason why Ultima Thule is interesting is because we've studied asteroids and we've studied comets that have come from the Kuiper Belt or the Oort cloud way out in the edges of the solar system, and they've come into our solar system. But that's been subjected to higher solar winds. It's been subjected to just the clouds of gas and the stuff that's in the solar system. This is a pristine object from the very beginning of the creation of our solar system. It blew all this stuff out to the Kuiper Belt area, and it's been floating around out there. And this is the first time that we've been able to fly by and study something that was literally created at the beginning of the solar system and has not been contaminated in any way by everything else that's going on in the solar system. So that's really exciting. It's going to be cool to see what all we find out about it. But it's a very dark object. One of the things I read was that it has basically the same reflectivity as potting soil. So it's only like 6% reflectivity. Huh. It's kind of amazing we were able to see it in the first place.
Yeah,
that says a lot about Hubble, really. So I mean, we got some images coming in. It's a little bit reddish, not in what's on the screen right now, but they did a sort of a layover of the color. Yeah, right there. It's a little bit reddish in color. But yeah, we're going to be seeing some stuff coming in from that in the next couple of months. And what we've got already is cool and exciting. And this is the furthest object we have ever visited, ever.
Mm-hmm. Visited.
So, visited, correct.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen really far away with, you know, in other galaxies and stuff, obviously.
And,
but,
and Voyager 1 and 2 are significant, quite a bit further away, because they're actually both now officially outside of the solar system.
Yeah, they've reached the heliopause.
Yeah.
Which means that the interstellar wind has balanced out the stellar wind from our sun.
Yep.
I think that's right.
Wait, wind?
So the intergalactic, like cosmic radiation
is
higher.
I always thought
higher than our own sun's solar wind and solar radiation, yeah.
I always thought if you were just out there in space and you got hot, you could just roll the window down, right? So now that I know that there's
you'll
wind.
You'll cool off real fast.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, you'd cool off very fast and then... And then you'd expand into a marshmallow. This is really cool. I was sad that we had New Year's plans. I worked like 5 days straight before New Year's. So I was not in a mood to like try to do a live stream or anything myself of this. And I didn't even have time to really read up on it too much. But New Horizons is one of those missions where you're just like, dude, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just nailed it. And they got to choose. I mean, they only honed in on Ultima Thule like fairly recently. Wasn't only like a couple years ago is when they actually decided like that's what they're going to target, because it was pretty, they didn't require much of a delta V change. Like, didn't have to change direction too much. It could kind of just orient it pretty quickly.
It says right there, Ultima Thule is 1.5 billion kilometers further out than Pluto is.
That's crazy.
I think that's the same distance between the sun and Saturn, if I'm not mistaken. Something
that's
like that.
That's nuts.
They'd already launched New Horizons before they found Ultima Thule and then decided to kind of, and they examined something else too, and I forget the name of it now, but they hit Pluto and they hit something else out in the Kuiper Belt.
It was Pluto's moon, wasn't it?
Well, Charon, no, there was something beyond that. I want to say it was Eris, but I don't think that's right. I shouldn't have said anything because I don't remember the name. But I know they flew past some other Kuiper Belt object too, but this is the furthest one away. And I don't think there's anything after this. I think the path is pretty clear from here on out. There's nothing else really for the New Horizons to see. I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. If it starts collecting data when it gets to the heliopause like Voyager has. But
it's super cool.
Pretty cool.
That's really cool.
And so, I was kind of saying before we got on here, I'm a little tease to Monday's video. I'm kind of previewing the science stories to look out for in 2019. And I had this on there, and I had the Chinese moon lander, Chang'e 4, I think is how it's pronounced. And it landed yesterday. So two of the things that I was going to talk about for 2019 have already happened on January 2nd.
How many things total did you have?
I don't even know, honestly. I didn't count them. It was probably, it was more than a dozen. But I mean, I could have gone further. I didn't even get into like biology and bioengineering, genetics and that kind of stuff.
I feel bad. Like I did that at the beginning of 2018. Like, you know, 4 of Tesla things I was excited about, and none of them happened. So I'm like not going to do it anymore.
You know? What were your 4? Or like what were some of them?
Okay, so back then it was the referral program was kind of in full swing with the secret levels. It was kind of very early on in that phase, so we didn't have all the ones. One of them was get to watch a Falcon Heavy launch, I didn't get to do that because it had already happened, I think, when they did that. And I think I hit YouTube up on, all right, when's the next one? I want to go. Is it like next week? Yeah. You're like, yeah, no, it's going to be a while. I'm like, yeah, damn it. So that didn't happen. Race a Tesla Semi. Didn't happen yet. I did talk to the guys, though, and that is happening, and it is going to be awesome. Drive a boring machine. Which apparently is actually incredibly boring and dumb. Like, you literally go in there, you're like, oh, here's like somebody explains all the buttons. A friend of mine got to go into it. But anyways, he's like, yeah, they explain all the buttons and you like push a button and nothing happens. But that's how slow it is. And then like there's a whole crew of people and then you just walk out. Okay, that didn't happen. But I guess I'm not really missing anything there. So yeah, Falcon Heavy, race a Tesla Semi, drive a boring machine, and then Model Y unveiling.
You should be able to race the Semi through the boring tunnel.
Yeah, maybe. It wouldn't fit.
Falcon Heavy.
Right. I wonder, race a Falcon Heavy through the boring tunnel.
Could you, what's the diameter of like a Falcon 9?
3.7 meters, so 12 feet wide.
Oh, okay, that's not bad. That's not that big. So, because the boring tunnel is like 18 feet or something. So, I think it's like 5 meters or something.
So, if you have gentle enough turns, you could just.
I was about to say, I don't think I'll make the curve.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a straight shot to their different test sites where they could literally load it in like a bank, like those bank teller things?
Yeah.
Those bank tubes and just.
The pneumatic. Well, pneumatic, I mean, what if that was just Hyperloop, you know?
That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Just, they need to get to it right now. And although I guess they could probably do like 30 machines in different segments would probably be the smart thing to do if you're smart instead of just one that would take 800 years to get to Texas and then to Florida. But
why don't they just fly it over there? It's a rocket.
Why don't they just in this episode? Of yeah. Why don't they just?
Can't they just strap it to the back of a commercial airliner? I mean, they did it with the space shuttle. You know.
True.
And they charge you for $25 for a damn bag, and but they can put the space shuttle on it.
Imagine if that was just a normal commercial flight. Like, yeah. All right, we're going to – never mind if you look up. There's a space shuttle there.
Yeah.
No, we
we're going to have to take on another passenger. It's the Endeavor.
What are these extra wings up there for? What is going on?
That'd be nuts. Oh. Well, yeah. So 2018 was great for that stuff, and sorry that your 2019 like looking forward things has already happened.
So I'm not doing a Tesla one for 2019 because I don't want to jinx it all. Right.
Well, it was funny. I looked back on I did one of these at the beginning of last year, and there were a couple of things that wound up on this year's list too because it didn't quite happen. Like the Indian ISRO's moon lander Chandrayaan 2, it didn't quite get there this year. They expected it would, but it didn't.
Yeah, those would be good things. I'll have a lot of moon landers. There might be the first commercial moon landing this year.
Israel.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we might have like a lot of probes on the new probes on the moon. I mean, all of a sudden we're like going back full swing all of a sudden.
That's good.
Cheering, you know, I'm excited. That's good stuff. I'm ready to explore that place again. It's so close.
Well, and just I didn't really say this earlier when I was talking about the Chinese mission. The cool thing about that one is it lands on the far side of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be doing radio astronomy there where they're shielded from all the noise, the radio noise from Earth, because they're on the other side of the moon. That's the first time anybody's ever landed on the other side of the moon.
Isn't that crazy that we're
I know,
just
that kind
now?
Of blows my mind. I figured for sure that happened by now, but no.
It's insane.
Do you guys understand how, like, I don't still fully grasp how we always only see one side of the moon? I figure, like, at some point the other side would have to flip around because it is rotating. I know we're rotating at, like, the same or something, but
Tidally locked. So basically, if, you know, after a long enough time, it's slightly, just a tiny bit, like, oblong or, like, you know, uneven.
Or the center of mass is closer to.
Yep.
Yeah.
It kind literally of just a little bit closer. The center of mass exactly is a little bit closer to Earth. So eventually, you know, it just, like, wobble. And then, like, eventually it'd probably start going like this, like, back and forth even, processing, like, back and forth, and eventually it just, like, locked on, and now we're just stuck looking at that one pretty face. It's weird.
Now, I know
isn't
that
it?
Has something to do with proximity, because the TRAPPIST system, when they discovered that, when they were talking about it, was the planets are so close to the star that they were probably tidally locked. Like, they, when they're doing exoplanet surveys, they factor that in to determine whether or not a planet might be tidally locked with the stars. Like, if it's really close.
Mm-hmm.
There's some physics there about gravity that I don't fully understand, but it has something to do with that.
Gravity works in the square inverse law. So yeah. Every time you get twice as far away from an object, it gets four times weaker.
Yeah.
So our sun, you know, is so much further away. It's significantly weaker gravitationally than what we experience here on Earth from the moon, actually, which is weird to think about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think that's how that works.
Something like that.
I'm gonna have to go Google that one.
Mercury is tightly locked. I don't think it is.
I've probably seen it explained a dozen times, and I'm still like, like, if I take my two coffee cups, it doesn't make sense. So if I spin them, I'll figure it out.
I could do a YouTube video on that.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. Like, explain it to me with coffee cups. Like, take a water bottle and a coffee cup and show me how it works. I was looking if Physics Girl had any of this, because I feel like this would be right up her alley.
Yep, that would very much be. I'm adding it to my list right now.
There we go. So you guys are welcome for that, for when Tim comes out with this video.
that's a good one. I like questions like that. I probably got something wrong trying to explain it now, and we need to start doing a segment of the show each week where we fix all of the things that we had wrong in the last show, because we talk willy-nilly about a lot of things just off the top of our head, and I think we get it all wrong. Quite often.
That's,
but hey,
we do.
That's how
we
it
need
goes.
To start correcting that stuff, so we don't make up stuff and then have misinformation out there.
We need to get your team of engineers on it, because I know you guys you got the whole like community going in your Discord and everything that just like jump all over this stuff.
They're smart people.
Yeah,
some smart people in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. It's so cool to like for instance, you know, I was like rushing really hard to get this video out before the end of the year. And so I shared the script and would like have holes in it of like, all right, guys, how many Soyuz launches were there? And then people figured out how many. Yeah. I had another patron down in Australia. She put together, like, downloaded it and got all the clips of things for me and put it in a Google Drive folder, so I didn't have to do all that. Like,
amazing.
And I'm just like, this is saving me so much time. That's the reason I was able to get it out before New Year's.
Like, normally we have to pay people for this.
Oh, it's so
See,
cool.
That's where I get hung up on that, because I know that a lot of my Patreon sponsors and whatnot, they want to be a part of that. They want to do exactly what you're talking about. But I feel so weird taking their money and then saying, now do work for me.
Well,
I mean,
they want to be involved.
I struggle with that.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's,
but I know they want to. And, like, that's kind of why they joined Patreon. They want to, like, be a part of the channel and help it grow and stuff.
I can think of so many people in my life that, you know, I want to help out. Like, I like what they're doing. I like their mm-hmm. product. I like the information or whatever they're working on. And if there's any way I can help in that, financially or otherwise, I would love to help, because I want it to keep going. And I think that's exactly what it is, you know.
It's clearly something I just have to get over.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine, you know, five years ago, if I'm trying to think of like one of my favorite podcasts was Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. It's a really good podcast. And, you know, when I had more free time and wasn't doing all this kind of stuff, I would have loved to be able to help out and do something to better their community. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think that's just awesome stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely cool to be able to help.
Mm hmm. Yeah, it's super appreciated by us, too, as content creators. I mean, holy cow, 100%. The amount of work is...
So talk to me about Spaceship, or Starship, or whatever it is called now.
Whoa,
whatever it's called this month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let me share the screen with you. We're going to go on a long journey here.
Strap in, kids.
So this was like, I'm sitting there trying to enjoy Family Christmas Part 1 out of like Part 30 or whatever it ends up being. Mm. And all of a sudden, someone just casually asks me on Twitter, hey, Tim, what is this? It was pictures. Let me see if I can get to the... Oh, come on. Get to the root of this.
Oh. But
basically, someone asked me, like, what is this? It was a picture of like a water tower looking thing out of Boca Chica, Texas, in the south of Texas. Hey, Jor, are we wearing the same shirt?
Damn it, I was going to reveal that later. I'm wearing Tim's shirt. I'm representing.
I love it. That's
but I was wearing a jacket to cover it up, but it's really hot in here. So.
I just realized that. That's awesome. Wow. Oh, that's funny. All right, sorry.
Ben, I have one of your shirts, too. It's really good for waxing my car.
Oh!
Oh, boom. Ooh, slam.
Remember, right, so. Remember, I edit this show, so we can make you sound how we want to sound there, Joe.
Well, Joe's not in this episode anymore.
Sorry, all right, so basically we were seeing some pictures, which I should find. Here, I'll show you what it looks like now. But basically we were seeing like this thing on the right. It was literally the base of a water tower produced by a water tower company even. Like, was building literally the start of a water tower. So a lot of people were confused of like, what is going on? They just assumed it's probably like the water deluge system, you know, out there that's going to be supported for the launch pad. But this is really far away from the launch pad. All these different things, rumors swirling like crazy. And finally someone asked me on Twitter, hey, Tim, what's, you know, everyday astronaut, what's with this? And I go, and it was a shiny part that was like next door to the, like inside the tent of where they're working on this giant structure. And it's, it happens to be 9 meters wide exactly. Strange, right? What else is 9 meters wide? So I kind of had a little bit of insight and said, like, this is the new, basically I'm like saying the new Starship will be stainless steel balloon tanks, heavy metal, calling it now. Welcome, I accidentally said welcome Atlas back, Atlas B. But like Atlas B or the Atlas 65 or SM-65A and B were stainless steel. So it's like the same idea. And Elon says stainless steel is correct, but different mixture of alloys and new architecture. So boom, he admitted stainless steel is correct. Unlike Atlas, Starship is buckling stable on launch pad, even when unpressurized.
Can you explain what buckling stable means?
This is buckling stable. This is a stainless steel rocket. And it actually had to have pressure constantly in it. Because there was no internal structure, there's no internal trusses, there's no internal ribbing or anything. In order to maintain
that does not
its
look good.
Rigidity, just like a soda can, basically, it had to be pressurized.
For
that
listeners,
was
what we're seeing is a rocket literally like imploding and crumbling on a launch pad.
Yep, and folding in half. Yeah.
Folding in half, yeah.
Yeah, like literally just, it's hilarious. It's very
like
comical.
If the Titanic was a rocket.
And so I posted this video on Twitter, and it says, here's a direct video for those too lazy to click. This is why the unlike Atlas Starship is buckling stable even when unpressurized is the key element. Because obviously if you're landing a rocket and you're like out of fuel, you know, these Starships will be landing. They take off, you know, and then they land. And if you land and you're out of fuel and the thing just folds over like a soda can or, you know, that's not good.
Reusable.
So that's why I kind of mentioned that. And then so Elon replies, yep, actually the only significant design element in common with early Atlas is stainless steel, and we're using a different alloy mix. I super love 300 series stainless, which is cool.
Man,
and
you
then,
and Elon just need to get a room, man.
He needs to, when this is all settled,
and
I think
Fred
we need to
too.
Have a little one-on-one, and I'm just going to ask him all of the questions in the world about neat things. So then Martin God of Mars asks, who makes that alloy, SpaceX or supplier? And Elon mentioned and replies, for sheet plate at suppliers made to our spec. So basically they get the raw material made to their spec for cast in their Hawthorne foundry. So they're actually casting their own stainless steel in Hawthorne. So just a Tinker says cast ribbing. Elon says cold formed at cryo, which I'm still trying to kind of figure all this stuff out. But basically, like, they're actually, I think, like, putting this stuff together at cryogenic temperatures. So, which is really, I think that might be one of those groundbreaking manufacturing techniques that they learned how to scale up and do. I still need to kind of learn more about that before I talk too much about it, because that's a video I'm going to be working on here soon. This guy named Tom says, launching Starlink from Starship, so the satellite constellation, are you going to be launching it in these giant Starships? And Elon says, Starlink V1 on Falcon V2 Plus. So he's saying now they're hoping to eventually have a version 2 and beyond before they even have version 1 going on Starship. Basically, all future products will contain either the word star or link. That's funny. I like that. So then Chris B. from NASA Space Flight says, while we have Elon, how well is Raptor performing during test stand firings at McGregor? On track to support your Super Heavy / Starship schedule. Elon says, yes, radically redesigned Raptor ready to fire. Radically redesigned Raptor? They've been working on this thing for years.
Yeah.
They're going through some big, big changes. And what? Like, why are you redesigning it now after it was been so successful already? And I asked, still full flow closed cycle. Don't tell me you're going beyond 300 bar, which is 300 atmospheres. So here in Merco, we measure that like one bar would be 14.7 PSI. So internal pressure of the engine, like of the combustion chamber, they're aiming for 300 bar, which will set new records. And Elon says, yes, full flow gas stage combustion. So that's the holy grail of rocket engines. It's where you have like two gas generators, that's all the fuel from all bits of it come together. Like, you don't waste any, there's no, like, extra exhaust of your turbo machinery or your turbo pumps. All the exhaust flows directly into the combustion chamber, pressuring it, like, all the way. It's just crazy, crazy complicated. It's never really been done before on a flight-worthy vehicle. He says, yes, full flow, gas, stage combustion. Will take us time to work up to 300 bar, so they aren't there yet. That is a mad level. And I said, that is mad level, but can we all agree that the RD-170 has been a little too comfortable at number one for too long at 265 bar? So that's the current record holder is the RD-170, which launched on the Energia rocket slash. It also flew on like the Polyus or something too. No, not Polyus. I don't remember what it is. Someone's yelling at their radio or TV right now, it flew on the something, damn. And I can't remember, but yeah, that holds the record for 265 bar. So then Elon goes, it's embarrassing that Boeing/Lockheed Martin needs to use a Russian engine on Atlas, but that engine design is brilliant, which it is, because it is closed cycle, not full flow stage combustion.
So like, is it like a diss on Russia right there, or a diss on Boeing Lockheed? I can't quite...
Really a diss on Boeing Lockheed.
Okay.
And then he says that engine design is brilliant. So he's basically commenting. He's pulling a little bit of a Donald Trump by dissing American manufacturing and complimenting Russia. But, yeah. But it is true. I mean, it is kind of unfortunate, but Boeing Lockheed Martin is switching to Blue Origin's engine on their next rocket, so they won't be using Russian engines in the near future. And meanwhile, the Russian NK-33 variants, the RD-180, RD-181, etc., are still, like, amazing. Like, still can't produce them today. They were that far ahead of their time.
Wow.
So that's some of the stuff we got there. And now we're just watching them actually put this together. We found out, I think there's some more tweets that I'm missing, but we basically found out that this is their hopper. And SpaceX will be practicing just their little, like, these little whoop, whoop, just kind of exactly like they did with the Falcon 9. They had the, for a little while, they had a vehicle called Grasshopper, which flew out at McGregor, Texas, their test stand out there. That basically went up, and I don't think it ever got above, like, 1,000 meters or something. Like, it didn't ever fly very high. But all it was doing was practicing how to propulsively land. And then they had the F9R dev, which was, a bigger version than Grasshopper, a lot closer to the full scale, like, you know, like a Falcon 9. So this is their hopper for their next
Starship
generation spaceship. Yep. So this is their, this is Starship hopper.
This will be the one that flies around the moon and takes people?
Yes. I mean, not this exact test article, obviously. Yes.
Yeah, but so this was the former BFS is what it was.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, got
it. We used to kind of call it BFS, the big Falcon spaceship.
Yeah.
Now it's just called Starship, which I personally actually am really growing fond of that. It makes you kind of easily delineates, like, delineate? Is that even a word?
Yeah, yep. Delineate.
Not very bad. Well. My mom would be proud.
SAT score.
Judges? Yep, that's a word.
You know, helps you, it lets you know exactly, like, which part of the rocket. I think my guess is that we still will never get away from BFR, which, you know, kind of meant, like, big frickin' rocket.
Well,
because when it's all together, it's still going to be, really, in most people's hearts and minds, a BFR. So
I think it's easier to distinguish between that and Falcon Heavy, though. Because to me, before, I was totally confused. I'm like, okay, BFR and Falcon Heavy, it's like a big rocket. Falcon Heavy's a big rocket. Like, yeah. like this being a starship, meaning people will be on it, makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Yep. But really, this is similar, though, nowadays. Starship is the payload and the upper stage. So it's almost like the, oh, I can't point to my stuff back here, but, you know, right now, like, the Dragon capsule is, we know, that's the payload, the Dragon capsule riding on a Falcon 9. We don't really have a word for it when it's all up together, like... You know, we don't call it like
Falcon
skinny
ship.
Rocket or Falcon ship or exactly
Falcon Link.
Yeah, or if the second stage would stay attached
Link ship.
To that'd be I kind of like this. but so this it is different because the you know the upper stage is also the crew capsule slash fairing if it's a cargo variant. So yeah, It's cool, though. I'm, like, just so excited that we're actually seeing this thing come together this fast for the hopper. But it is, once it starts hopping, that's a huge sign, because that means they are operating the Raptor engines, you know, and throttling them, learning how to do all that stuff. That's going to be crazy. Like,
That was one of the things that excited me the most, was the idea that they're finally going to be testing out those Raptor engines, like, on an actual ship, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Yeah.
Especially if they're redesigning them last minute. I wonder, though, they've been doing subscale tests for a long time, for 3 or 4 years. I wonder if this radical redesign is them, like, ramping up fully to really produce it. But I would love to know what this redesign is. It would be hilarious and the biggest shock ever if they went with, like, an aerospike, which is a nozzle-less design. It's like an inverted nozzle, basically, which makes it more efficient at sea level and in space. Like, well, it's actually, the funny thing is it's less efficient at sea level than a sea level engine. It's less efficient than a vacuum engine is in a vacuum, but throughout the whole range, it's better than either one would be. Like, you know, it's on average better, but the problem is, like, it ends up not really being worth it. Like, that nozzle is really heavy. It has to be cooled. No one's really ever done it because it's just not really worth it, you know? So I would be shocked if they actually did an aerospike. Like, I don't see them doing that.
Slow and steady wins the race. So the question I have is, who's investing in the companies that make stainless steel polish? Because keeping that stuff clean is a nightmare. So I'm going to go buy some Unilever stock here, and we're gonna do this.
Buy WD-40. Do you know that WD-40 was invented literally to keep those Atlases, like, ready for flight?
So if my toddler runs up and gets his fingerprints all over the Starship, I spray it with WD-40?
Yep, wipe it down.
I don't know. I don't know if I trust you on that one.
Yep.
Why that is might your be the toddler playing around rockets?
What I'm just that? Saying.
You're a bad father.
I'm just saying stainless steel is a con, all right? They sell you these appliances thinking they look all good, and then you touch them once, and it's game over. They never look good. Just don't do it.
But this leads into, I didn't even get to, like, the why stainless steel thing, I guess. I'm just sitting here blabbing
on about. Is it cheaper? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys know why?
It's cheaper.
Enlighten us.
It's crazy. So it's not cheaper. Maybe it is cheaper than carbon fiber. But that has nothing to do with it. The real reason is, it operates actually technically better at cryogenic temperatures. It's actually stronger at cryogenic temperatures than carbon fiber is potentially, or carbon composites. But the big thing is, it's like 3 or 4 times stronger at reentry temperatures and can handle like 3 or 4 times higher temperatures than carbon composites can. And this vehicle is coming back in, you know, at reentry speeds, not like, you know, the first stage of the Falcon 9 comes in 4 times slower than like a Dragon capsule or, you know, the space shuttle orbiter would come back in. It doesn't deal nearly with those kind of loads. This is coming in at orbital speed. So it's going to require normally a massive heat shield. But it sounds like, he actually ended up, Elon told us a little more about it. But basically he admitted that they're doing active cooling, and the bright, shiny, reflective surface literally radiates some of the heat away. So it like physically reflects some of the heat that would normally come in. The heat that comes in is actually just compressed, you're hitting the atmosphere, you're compressing it, it can't get out of the way fast enough, and so it creates this bow shock wave in front, it compresses, it heats up into a plasma even, and then that in turn ends up, you know, really heating up whatever it's touching at that point. And so normally you need what's called an ablative heat shield, a heat shield that ablates away material. It purposefully flakes off material, and in flaking off material, it takes some of the heat with it. Mm-hmm. That's how, like, heat shields, like we know most of them, all work that way. It's very reliable. It's very, like, you know, it's very effective. Very, very, very effective. It's basically just chemistry. Like, you're having something heat up, and as it heats up, it just leaves, and then bye-bye, and you take the heat with it. The space shuttle, on the other hand, literally absorbed the heat and just kept it. The reason it basically had wings was not only for some cross-range capability so it could land, have more flexibility in its landing sites, but also so it could stay up in the high enough atmosphere where it could actually radiate away the heat and just kind of like stay at that equilibrium where it's not going to totally heat and soak through to the aluminum shell, the aluminum aero shell. It would stay in this position where it's not heating up fast enough and soaking up too much heat. Otherwise, it would have like literally just melted. And so by staying in the upper atmosphere longer, it can bleed off speed slowly and heat up slowly and radiate, blah, 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 blah. Starship, on the other hand, will kind of do a similar thing to that, really, where it's, it's going to be doing the skydiving thing. Yep. Yeah. The free-falling thing. So it'll bleed off speed a lot faster than the space shuttle. It won't really fly through the atmosphere. And it will not have an ablative heat shield. And that's all part of reusability. If you have to ablate, you know, material away and have stuff flake off, that means every flight you're going to have to, like, respray it with a heat shield, put on a new heat shield. By doing an active system like this,
It sounds like there's more chance for it to go wrong, though, isn't there? Like, if the cooling doesn't work?
Yeah.
The whatever system that is all of a sudden fails on reentry.
Well, the funny thing is, stainless steel on its own, it would probably survive.
But what about it wouldn't be what's inside of it stuff, right?
Yeah, so that's actually kind of the cool thing is, even if the cooling system were to completely fail, the skin would probably start to melt and fatigue and all this stuff, and you'd probably have like a depressurization event and all this stuff. But there's still going to be some kind of core in the center. I'm guessing they're going to still have their Ullage tanks. There's like mini tanks inside of the big tanks. Mm-hmm. Those will probably still be carbon fiber. That'll probably be the backbone of the spaceship, I'm guessing.
Mm.
And so even if like the outer shell starts to deform and do all these bad things because the cooling didn't work, it might actually still be able to survive. Mm. You know, not be reusable, but it might actually
But what if you're on it at that time?
What was that?
What if you're on the ship at that time?
You might survive.
Are you saying it would still propulsively land?
But yeah, because the fuel left over will be in those Ullage tanks. Mm. And he mentioned that even in 2017, that they keep the landing fuel in these Ullage tanks. So I'm guessing these Ullage tanks will become the backbone of the ship. That's why it's still stable. Because the crazy thing is, they will need to pressurize that outer skin, and that will not basically be the structure that holds the ship up. You know, it'll have...
Yeah.
You know, that will be too weak, but that's why it has that inner structure, and it's just a totally different... It is very counterintuitive. It's very... You know, you're using a heavier thing, but... You look at it as like, first of all, they already can supposedly take 100 metric tons to low Earth orbit. There's nothing we have out there that needs 100 metric tons for low Earth orbit. Like, that's super overkill. You know, right now the Falcon Heavy, even in expendable mode, is like 63 metric tons. So, you know, if they are on par with that, like, there's not going to be unreal demand for that, really.
Yeah.
So they have margin right now to make it heavier, at the sacrifice of being significantly more reusable, you know, because now we're looking at like, if it just comes in and you spray it down with WD-40 or whatever you're going to do, give it a quick wash and fuel it back up and take back off, like total win. You know, who cares if it's a little heavier? Who cares if it's, you know, I mean, I think this is really, really exciting. And I'm a little, my biggest pause on this whole topic though, is the fact that we're supposedly like, 2 years away from seeing orbital flights, and they're still making massive changes.
Mm.
That to me, like, we're still seeing redesigns in the Raptor engine. All of a sudden, we're seeing skin, you know, the whole fuselage, all these things change within the last like 6 months. But to that note, also, there's a chance they've been actually pursuing this, you know, side by side with carbon fiber for 2 years.
Yeah.
They finally, you know, someone comes through like, hey, listen, this is why it actually just makes sense. For instance, they almost scrapped Falcon Heavy. Like, they literally, Elon in a meeting said, this is it, we're going to have to scrap Falcon Heavy. And Gwen Shotwell ran in and said, "You can't do that. I have customers that have literally already paid for their flights for Falcon Heavy. Like, we have to fly these payloads." So she came in and, like, reminded him that, like, you can't scrap Falcon Heavy. So I'm guessing it's like, you know, and at the same time, like, Falcon Heavy was stuck on the Falcon 9's architecture. They have a clean sheet design here, so they can go through radical redesigns and really come up with, like, what is the best solution for getting as much stuff into space and be fully reusable.
Yeah. Like,
that is the end goal, period. Forget what numbers attached to it. Even if it can only deliver one metric ton to space, but it's 100% reusable, total win. Mm. You know, like, who cares if it's a million stories tall and cost $1 million or $1 billion to make or something? If it's totally, totally reusable, you know, you can pay that off if you're flying it 1,000 times, you know?
I just want the flight to Shanghai to be 30 minutes. That's all I care about.
It could happen, man.
And I want worldwide gigabit internet to where when I'm on my road trip, my car never loses connection. You know?
In our ludicrous future, it could happen.
Yay. Dun, 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 dun.
He said the name and the thing we're talking about.
That's why they titled it that. Whoa.
But yeah, I'm still diving into this. I've kind of waited. A lot of people were like, why don't you have a video out right away like always? I'm still kind of waiting for things to roll in. I'm reading a ton of research papers about stainless steel. I've been reading a lot about there's old... You know, people have been talking about doing this, actually turning the Centaur upper stage of an Atlas, like Atlas V has a Centaur upper stage, which is stainless steel balloon tanks. It's pressurized stainless steel balloon tanks. They've talked about using that as a reentry system for decades. So it's not, they're not doing anything completely unheard of here. It is kind of backwards thinking, though, and it's kind of almost going back and back to the future, if you would.
Back to the ludicrous future.
Aren't they supposed to maybe not announce a redesign, but like update the design sometime this year?
Yeah.
So I don't know when it is, but isn't
that... In that tweet storm, basically, I almost said Elliot for some reason. Elon, whatever that guy's name is, Elon basically said, like, they hope to do a full-blown, like, rundown on this new architecture once they get the thing hopping. Mm-hmm. So the crazy thing
happen
is
in
they're
like
claiming
March or April, right? Isn't that the
they're
plan?
Saying March or April. Mm, they're also claiming this water tower thing is the actual hopper. And there, you, by the way, I should point out in the pictures here, if you're watching this, you can see in the latest pictures, you actually see what look like engines.
Yeah.
I don't think there's no way those are the actual nozzles ready from a Raptor engine yet. I'm guessing that's just a placeholder.
I read somewhere that those are the Raptor engines, but I could be wrong about that.
I just can't imagine that that's correct yet. I don't know. I'm guessing this is for the pictures and the mock-up, but they will then turn this into the flight hopper. And by doing so, literally, you'll have like a separate internal, you know, tanks and stuff. Basically, like, that'll just be the shell, and inside it is like a little tiny suborbital hopping machine, you know. So we're just looking at a shell that's representative of a similar size, probably similar weight distribution and things like that. You know, they're probably just making it a boilerplate, and the internal will just be a small little methane, you know, Methalox powered, Raptor powered little hopper. So
yeah. What are your thoughts on the fact that this is so out in the open? It's literally out in the open and people are taking pictures of it and stuff, as opposed to, say, Blue Origin, where everything is so secretive and under the covers and everything. Like, I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, they're so, like, sharing this process with the world, and it's dirty and it's messy and it's complicated, and it changes all the time, and it can be frustrating for us. But do you think this is something that goes on behind the scenes in every rocket company?
Yes,
we don't get to see it.
I think what this is that physically they don't have a facility big enough right now to produce any of this hardware at the moment. They are working on their port, you know, in Port of Los Angeles. They'll have the factory there. But currently, like, for this hopping article, and this is not like, you know, people are going like, farmers are building this thing. You know, like, this is like the astronaut farmer, basically. But this is not like, this won't be going fast, really. You know, it won't. It's just going to be hopping around. Like, it's not like space hardware, you know? This is just rough and dirty hardware, you know? Like,
so what's the point of this then? Just to test some of the components, or?
Yeah, mostly just to get good at practicing how to throttle those engines, how to precisely maneuver, you know, and handle the new engines, basically, is landing on these engines, you know, landing propulsively is like 100% how to throttle your engines and do it precisely. So, yeah, it's basically like learning how to control it via that.
Now, are they going to practice water landings as well?
Too soon.
No, they know how to do that. That's,
yeah.
they nailed that one.
They do know how to do that. And, well, eventually, this isn't the article that will do, like, crazy fast supersonic reentries. But eventually, from Boca Chica, I'm starting to realize, I don't think Boca Chica will ever fly, like, the full... I don't think they'll ever do, like, actual missions out of there. I think this is... Because, as a matter of fact, Gwen Shotwell, I watched a, like, 45-minute speech she just did yesterday. She did it, like, 2 months ago. But she referred to Boca Chica, Texas, as their... like test pad, basically. Mm-hmm. She doesn't call it their new launch facility. This is just a test pad. And I think what we're going to see, like, we're going to see Starship going up, actually exiting the atmosphere, getting downrange quite a bit, like into the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, turning around and come screaming back at the launch pad at near orbital velocity so it can practice that reentry thing, you know? Mm. And
I guess that's the only way to do it.
That's the only way to do it, yeah. So they're going to have to practice that, and that's crazy and scary, and I can't believe it. But that will not be this. This is not – this is literally just for these little tiny things. The one that does those big, crazy supersonic reentries and things like that, that will be a lot closer to final flight specs.
Well, you think about it. They're first testing this out with brand new engines. They're not going to like put a lot of time and money and effort into creating this perfect thing that has a – 80% chance of crashing at some point.
Prototypes and testing and validation.
Yep, and it won't have, you know, it doesn't even have like the foldable, you know, the legs that are slash like wings slash whatever. Like it won't have any of that stuff. So,
yeah, there's a lot of testing they're going to have to do. There's a lot of stuff they're doing for the first time.
Yes. Yes. I mean, this is, I think their timeline of thinking they're going to put humans on Mars still like 2024 is just unbelievably. Yeah. I'm still in the camp that I will be surprised if we see anything orbital from a Starship even by 2022, personally.
Yeah.
Well, in 3 years, like that's
SpaceX has aggressive. A better track record than Tesla, so maybe, you know.
Kind of. I mean, Falcon Heavy was 5 years delayed from its
five years?
Supposed to fly.
Yeah.
5 years. From we're going to be flying in 2013, like Q1 2013 to Q1 2018.
In 2013, did they even have like... like the Falcon 1 yet?
Yeah.
From Quads or whatever?
They had only launched like a Falcon 9 like four times or something, and they're announcing Falcon Heavy.
Yeah. Like all we have to do is strap three of them together. How hard can it be?
Like, hey, you got some giant zip ties? Let's make this happen, guys.
I think that was the initial thought, was like, this will be easy. I mean, that's why they did it. That's why they pursued it. And then the problem was they kept changing the Falcon 9. And until the Falcon 9 was like... I mean, look at how much that thing grew. It's a completely different... As a matter of fact, the Falcon 9 is so powerful, it ended up flying a lot of the customers' payloads that were supposed to launch on Falcon Heavy because it was that powerful now. Mm. It's a completely different rocket than it initially was, basically.
Do you think SpaceX has their own why-don't-they-just department? Is there like just a group of people like us, just a bunch of goobers sitting around going, why don't you just do that? And then a bunch of engineers like just hitting their head against a wall, and then Elon being like, yeah, why don't you do that? And then, you know,
I think the why don't you just department of SpaceX is Elon.
Right. Yeah. Why don't you just do that? Like, great. I do know a guy.
Like, Elon, you can't land a rocket, man. Why don't you just do it?
Yeah. I do know a guy at Tesla that said that's kind of how it goes. You know, they'll say, how are we going to do this? Elon will just come and say, why don't you just, you know, send the battery pack across the factory at 30 meters per second? You know, what could go wrong? And then they're like, no, that won't work. They're like, don't tell me that. You know, Elon's just very like, don't ever tell me it's impossible. And then they go do it. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's why you don't do that. Because if this falls, it will just kill 50 people in its wake, right? So you don't do those kind of things, but you have to prove it to them first.
Why don't we just 100% automate the factory?
Yeah, right. Flufferbot.
Yep.
Not going to cut it. Yeah. I was trying to explain it to my dad recently, and he just didn't quite get it, but...
It's crazy stuff, guys.
Flufferbot sounds like something different.
1984 kind of stuff, right?
Mm. Maybe just different period.
Yeah. There's a certain.
Do you guys know what? Do you guys know the
term?
Do you guys know the reference at all, Flufferbot?
It fluffs up the seats or something, right?
No. So when Elon was talking about the alien dreadnought factory that was overly automated, one of the examples he gave was they were putting this layer of kind of insulation on top of the Model 3 battery packs. And it was a soft, a fluffy kind of material is what he called it. So they had a robot-like arm that would come out and try to lay it out. But if you've ever tried to, say, put a rug or a carpet or something down, you know, it never just, like, lays perfectly flat. There's always, like, wrinkles and stuff like that. And Flufferbot, as he called it, couldn't figure it out. And it would take forever for it to try. Whereas a person could literally just walk over there and just, you know, kind of move their hands around and boom, it's fine. So a human's ability to do those little kind of to handle those kind of things it didn't plan on is, you know, just totally destroys a robot's ability to do it. And then they learned that the entire fluff stuff that the insulation type stuff on top of the battery pack was unnecessary. So they just completely eliminated the whole part of the process. But then so he said they got rid of Flufferbot. It was on like an interview or something is where that came from. So,
Yeah.
That's so you can blame Elon for naming things yet again.
So I want to do my classic. Is that it, everybody? Did we finally do it? We're on episode 15. We're just doing so great. But Joe, were you going to talk about this other thing?
What's the other thing?
I mean, you've got a link here for the Volkswagen EV mobile
charging station.
Oh, I did
link,
station.
Yeah.
Look
I didn't
at
know
me.
If I talk about it or not. It never came up again.
Yeah, 2019, we're like starting fresh with me not being the one to close out the show.
Well, there's not really much to say here, but there was an article from The Verge that was talking about this product that Volkswagen has come out with. You know, it's partly to make up for Dieselgate, and I think it's partly because they really are switching toward the whole electric thing, but they have these portable mobile charging stations there you go. And I don't know how I feel about it. That's kind of why I wanted to bring it up and see what you guys thought. But it's there's some specs in there. We'd have to kind of look through to see what they are. But they can charge like 360 kilowatt hours. It's basically a giant battery pack. And it's their conceit here is that like instead of going to a charging station, they would bring the charging station to you.
Like an Uber for charging? Like it just comes and fills you up?
See, I don't know. I'm confused by that. Because they were saying it could go up in parking lots, grocery stores, that kind of thing. And maybe they could just kind of move them around. But obviously, if it was in a specific spot and plugged into the grid, then it could be, you know, constantly recharged. I think they said 15 EVs can be charged in one station at once, which sounds like a lot. It's only going to be in Europe for a while. They're only just now rolling them out. But who knows if they'll ever make it over here to the States. But I think the charging infrastructure thing, Electrify America, is something that VW has going on. That's kind of a big thing that's going on right now. And this was an idea that I hadn't heard of before, the whole mobile battery version of it.
Why would you want it? I get the idea of like a AAA type truck, you know, like a roadside assistance truck having a giant mobile battery pack. And like if you're stalled somewhere. I don't understand this. This is, if you're just watching, it's literally a phone booth that's all batteries.
Yeah.
That they apparently plop down at a parking spot and then you come and charge to it. Like, I don't quite get who it's servicing and why, as opposed to like.
I think the idea would be that you just go and it comes to you. Right?
Again, like, why isn't it on a truck? Like, why would they plop down a. Like, oh, now we get the crane out of the truck.
It would solve the problem of getting iced, as we call it, where a person with a gas car parks in a EV charging spot because you could just park anywhere and it would come to you. I don't know if that's that big of a thing to solve.
Say,
like, seems like a engineering solution to a problem that doesn't exist, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see if you had like a restaurant or a store of some kind and you wanted to kind of try out putting a charging station up and see if people would actually use it. And so it'd be like a little test that you're like not a big completely event.
It's like the
to?
It's like the porta potty of EV charging stations.
Yeah, it really is. I can see like maybe like an like an event, like say there's like a big sporting event and there's an arena
and you should need a
huge
influx of EVs or something, and you make some temporary EV spots or something, maybe. Yeah. But again, is that why don't you just make a permanent charger?
It sounds like a very niche kind of thing to make.
Yeah.
That may or may not be useful in 10 years.
Yeah, right? In any way, shape, or form.
And even 360 kilowatt hours, I mean, depending.
That's
so
impressive.
Yeah, but it depends on how big the battery is in the EV, right? Because mm-hmm. if you have a P100D, that's 3.6 cars. Right. So 15 cars, maybe if you're talking about the little 40 kilowatt hour Nissan Leafs or something like that. Yeah. But no, it's
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. What is their math on that?
You know,
360 kilowatt hours. What cars can you do 15 charges on?
Oh, I got
the
it
bird
here.
Scooters.
So is this about if you don't have a place to charge, like you live somewhere. But see, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. I don't know.
So they're going to drop it off
every
day? What was that?
I was going to say, I can kind of see what you just said, Tim, about like if there was a big festival or some event going on, that they could wheel those out there for people who needed a place to charge at those things. But
it just seems weird. I don't
yeah.
get it.
Hey, but, you know, I'm all for any
I'm
kind
all for
of
new ideas, yeah.
Yeah, like maybe we're not seeing it. You know,
yeah.
maybe there was somebody
yeah.
there that really understood it. And but yeah, I guess we're all Tesla owners. And for us, it doesn't seem to make sense, right? Not right now.
Now, speaking of the icing thing you just brought up, that's been in the news a lot lately.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been several instances of guys in big pickup trucks parking and taking up all the Tesla spots and like yelling and harassing the Tesla drivers and stuff. And they have to call the police.
Yeah, it's happened
yeah,
like twice,
yeah,
I guess,
electric.
In like North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah,
so they're real anti-American out there, I guess.
That one was in North
huh?
Carolina right there. There was another one that I saw recently.
So here's what I'm trying to figure out. Are these people anti-torque? Probably not, because they're driving diesel trucks. So torque, ha. Huh? Are they anti-America? Probably not. Like, are they must just be like anti, like the super pro-noise. They love noise.
Or gas. Where'd you say North Carolina?
This one was North Carolina.
Pole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny.
So
huh?
weird.
No, that's what I was thinking. Like, this is what I see is people in trucks that were built in Mexico and China harassing people driving cars that were made in America.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there's just a bunch of high school kids like that have no idea. Just
yeah.
literally don't understand at all what they're even doing.
I mean, it's one thing when you're in North Carolina, which I assume there's parking everywhere, and you were doing it intentionally. It's different when, like, I see it at the mall all the time, where it's not a charging spot, but it's a clean air vehicle spot mm-hmm. that we have at all the places where if you have a hybrid or something, and you see people parking there, and it's like, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing it. I kind of get pissed off about it, but at the same time, it's like there's no parking anywhere, you know, so it's more like whether they were intending to be rude about it or if it was just like a necessity. I don't know. It seems like I could understand maybe. But in that where, I mean, I don't know. Are there places in North Carolina that have hard time parking? I'm assuming not. But, you know,
that wasn't the case here. They were
right.
Clearly,
that's what
like,
I mean. Yeah.
And I saw another provoking. Picture where they were parked like. Horizontally sideways. Across several spots, just
yeah,
trying to block them.
It does suck. Like, and I actually had an incident once where I went and talked to a cop about it. I was at my gym, and there was somebody parked there. I didn't need to charge because obviously it was only, you know, I just come from my house. I had plenty of range, whatever. But I thought it was real upsetting. And there was actually a woman there with the Nissan Leaf that really needed it. And so she couldn't, she had to like, literally she parked in front of this, car or like behind it. So it couldn't get out. Right. And just left her car there. And I didn't blame her at all for that. And I went and talked to a cop about it. I said, hey, these guys are parked in this EV spot. It has a thing. It says you can't park here. Well, first I went and talked to the people at the gym. It was a YMCA. They said, this was the most ironic thing. They said, oh, well, yeah, someone got upset last time we put a little note on their car to not park there. So we're not putting notes on there anymore. I'm like, so if someone does something wrong and you call them out on it, then they get upset?
They got a note.
I know. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what about the family parking? There's family parking all over the place. And what if you have like kids and you got to, you know, haul them all the way across this parking lot while it's raining because some, you know, somebody ignored the sign and they're like, oh yeah, that sucks. I'm like, it's the same thing. Like,
yeah. So and what are the cops saying?
Well, this is more of a necessity. Like people require.
It's not just a convenience. Yeah.
No.
So they said, okay, well, you can talk to the police. There happened to be a cop in the parking lot. And so I'm like, cool, I'll go talk to him. I went up, talked to him, and he said, well, there is no, in San Diego, no city ordinance or anything that makes it illegal. It's up to the establishment, the you know, grocery store or whatever. And so they would have to actually call the police or call a tow company and have them towed. Which obviously, if they're afraid to put a note on the guy's car, they're not going to have him towed, right? So I kind of think that's lame. I think there should be more of a regulation around that. Personally, I think it should be like a handicap spot. Like
the rebuttal would be electric cars parking in gas station stalls.
Sure,
you know, like you would never do that. You would never pull up to a gas station and just.
I've done that.
Have you?
Well, I just need to go run in and grab something and leave. I'm not like
Well, I mean, if it's like but imagine if it's like totally full, like you know,
people waiting at Costco, and we mob in with 100 Tesla. I don't know if you guys have this Costco gas stations out there, but we have them, and people will wait for like hours. So could you imagine if we like organize an event where we all bring our Teslas there and just stop and just like go into Costco and go shopping,
right?
And it'd just block 100% of them.
It'd be unbelievably like people would just wouldn't be able to believe it. Well, that's exactly what this is, you know, like it's so rude. What's hilarious is people realized I saw a video of a guy taking a Model X. He could pull a full literally tow a full size like Silverado right out of its spot, which I just think is hilarious.
Did they do that?
Yes. Well, it was a demonstration, though. It was like his sister's truck.
Yeah, it was somebody they knew.
But it was in park or whatever?
It was in park, but only rear-wheel drive park. So I wonder if it could have done it.
Parking brake? Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Well, if you're in park and you're in just rear-wheel drive only the back wheels will be locked up, your front wheels.
Oh, right.
Would not be disconnected from the front drivetrain.
I would not be shocked at all if in areas like this, Tesla comes out with a towing service. And it's like, just call us and we'll have somebody from the service center hop down there in a Model X that has like a little tow thing that just pops out and pulls them and just leaves them in the middle of the road or something.
Oh, it'd be so great. Even like the funny thing is there is a chance that, you know, a Model X on dry pavement would easily be able to pull a large truck. Because lots of times those trucks have like mud tires, which are, you know, your contact patch is tiny compared to a Model X with, you know, big fat street tires. Just as heavy, more torque, like you'd be able to pull it out of its spot no problem. I think that'd be so satisfying.
This sounds like a very fun video to make.
Yes. Please redo it and find someone with a P100D Model X with a towing hook. Find someone with a big diesel 4x4 with some kind of like, you know, a little bit off-roady tires so they aren't as sticky. And just show, like, this is what happens.
Well, I'm going to Vegas next week at CES. And, oh, actually, no, my buddy with his Model X P100D won't be there. Dang.
I'm sure you can find somebody else.
Yeah.
They'll have to have a towing hook, though, in the towing package.
Isn't that standard? Or do you have to add that on?
Pretty sure you have to add it, don't you?
I don't
know. Come on, Tesla guy.
Yeah, I know. There are so many options. So I was shocked by this, by the way. So I don't know. I think I said it, but they dropped the price by all these cars by $2,000. So you can now get, it's actually really great deal on the new Model 3s and stuff. Even the performance one at $62,000 now, it's a steal. And it includes the $5,000 package, which you didn't opt for there, Tim. By the way, did you ever get your money back or free supercharging, or what was the compromise there?
I have free supercharging, but I think I might get the money back because clearly that's a better deal.
Yeah.
Like, I would never spend $5,000 on supercharging.
That'll take you your whole life. Yeah. Yeah. But
so I think we're just going to take the cash.
That is so 62 grand for the Performance Model 3. You cannot, with the performance, you cannot, there is no other car with that amount of performance that is even close to that in price. There's no way. 3.3 seconds 0 to 60. I mean, that's like 3.3 seconds 0 to 60 is like a Audi R8 or like not even. It's like a Ferrari almost or something, you know?
Like
it's insane.
Corvette. Yeah. I mean, it's up there.
Yeah.
It's up there.
Like, I don't know if it comes with the towing package. That is an interesting thing. I am going to go. So, as I mentioned, I'll be at CES next week, and I am going to ride in my buddy Dan's original Roadster. So I can't wait to go do that. He just got it, and he's doing all kinds of fun stuff with it, and it's really, really cool. So I'm going to go have some fun with that. Maybe we'll jump
in. That'd be a good investment at this point, an original Roadster.
Yeah, so what he did, I don't know if you guys saw his videos, but he had $50,000 down for the Next Gen Founder Series, and then he got a free one through the referral program, and then because of that, he already had $50,000, like, you know, earmarked for the Roadster, so he just took that money back and then went and bought an actual original Roadster for about the same price. So for him, he's like, yeah, so he already has an X100D and a XP100D, and now an original Roadster, and then a Founder Series Roadster whenever, if and when, whatever, you know.
That's ridiculous.
You know, the fabulous lives of YouTubers, I guess, right?
Right.
We'll get there, guys. We'll get
there. One day.
Someday I'm going to have 9 Teslas.
and 4 of them are those little...
Patreon supporters, we clearly need more Teslas, so...
God. Oh,
and
what
we just
jabronis.
Lost half our Patreon supporters.
So, Joe, what are you working on? You're working on what to look forward to in 2019, is that right?
Yeah. I shot that yesterday, and I'm clearly going to have to update it now before I put it out.
Just what to look back towards in 2019.
Right. 2019, the year that was.
Yeah. Or you could say, like, we've already had some exciting things happen in the first 2 days, and, like grumble on it of the fact, like,
well,
I already shot this.
I'm recording, and I'm like, as of this recording, we don't have any images of Ultima Thule, and then like 2 hours later, there's an image of Ultima Thule.
That's how it always is. Always. So, that's funny.
I'll have to do future Joe notes that are like, I was wrong about this.
Yeah, I like that. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, going to CES, going to have some fun. Don't check out some new EVs. Finally back in the studio so I can record a voiceover that was missing for a video I had planned on publishing already. But that's about basically why we need 400 plus mile EVs. So that'll be coming out hopefully tomorrow.
Sweet.
What about you?
Nice.
Oh, I'm back editing Canceled 2, part 2. Yeah.
2019 edition.
I'm working on that. And then I've got I'm going to have to talk about the stainless steel Starship thing. And I'm going to have to do a video. I've got another fun video that I'm working on too, that I'll tell you guys about when we get there. But for now, Canceled's coming out hopefully by the weekend. So hopefully, you know how that works.
Sounds good, guys.
Yeah.
I think we did it.
Well, welcome back.
Yeah.
And Happy New Year, everybody.
Feliz Año.
Yeah. Happy New Year, everybody. Well, that's going to do it for
our ludicrous future.